Hi, and welcome to the Cloud Computing Show, episode number 17. Today, we are really pleased to have John N. Gates, the Chief Technology Officer of Rackspace, joining us. Hi, John.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good. And my name is Gary Ornstein. I'm the host of the Cloud Computing Show. We're going to jump right into the news. It's been a few weeks since the show, the Cloud Computing Show, and one of the big events that happened between then and now is VMworld. And of course, there was a lot of hoopla about VMworld. And one of the things that I keep noticing is this inextricable line that VMware keeps drawing between virtualization and cloud computing. And John, I just want to ask you a question. Like, is virtualization a prerequisite to cloud computing? What's your take there?
Well, my take is that it's not a prerequisite to the cloud. Virtualization has certainly appeared and shows up in several clouds that everybody's going to be familiar with. Rackspace has one called Cloud Servers, and Amazon's EC2 is pretty familiar, and a few others. Those are certainly clouds with virtualization underneath, but there's probably just as many or more where there is no traditional server virtualization involved. And a couple examples there, we have two of them, Cloud Sites and Cloud Files, our storage cloud. They don't have any virtualization in the sense of like a VMware something else. I think Google's App Engine probably doesn't have anything like that in it. A lot of the other services that Amazon has built, their SimpleDB and others, they don't have necessarily any virtualization underneath. So cloud, I don't think, if you run down the typical characteristics of a cloud, there's nothing that really demands that virtualization be a part of it.
Yeah, I tend to agree. It just sometimes in the activity of a big show like that, it seems like they become synonymous.
Yeah. Well, that's fair. I mean, I take it to the SaaS marketplace where cloud is really encompassing software as a service nowadays, and a lot of that doesn't really require virtualization either. And I do think VMworld's a big event, and they're certainly branding cloud on top of their product pretty heavily, and so it does sort of tend to maybe go together, but not required.
Yeah. Another piece of news that came out just a couple days ago, Microsoft website Spark, it looks like they're making their entire suite of development tools for Microsoft-based web frameworks available for free. And, it'll be curious to see if that really changes development habits or has any motion whatsoever, vis-a-vis Windows versus the LAMP stack. John, what's your take on the development community? And do you see that there's an opportunity? Will this change the game for people considering developing on Windows?
Well, I would say that one thing I know about developers is that they can be very religious about their tools and what platforms they develop on. And so it's certainly not going to change the mind of anybody who's already a LAMP developer or an open source developer or something in that category. But for companies that are, maybe starting up, sometimes the developers that you have on your team dictate or demand that the platform that you're going to choose. Sometimes it's your customers that pull you in a direction. So I think maybe somebody who has no specific allegiance to one platform might be drawn in. I think one of the advantages that Microsoft sort of talks about when they talk about this program is that they're going to send you some leads. And for a company that needs that, that might be useful. For somebody who wants to get started developing apps, I mean, it's certainly a good choice. It's not. There's nothing inherently wrong with choosing that platform. But I also would say that it's not completely free. You said that they're going to offer the tools for free, but if you look in the program a little bit, they charge you $100 when you leave the program. So it's not quite free, and there is a bit of a commitment there. So I would say that the hardest part for somebody is just sort of the fine print and understanding what they're getting themselves into. That might be a big hurdle. But, if you're interested in Microsoft, there's certainly a lot of tools and lots of guidance out there. I think for a new developer, somebody who hasn't done it for a long time, it might be a good choice.
Yeah, that's the news that I sort of gleaned from scouring the web a little bit. People say that the development tools are really comprehensive, and if you are a newer developer, then it may be easier for you to get started than going some of the other open source routes.
I would agree with that.
Another big news, and this is at least geographically close to you, Dell announced that they were going to acquire Perot Systems. And just from a big picture perspective, John, is there a cloud angle to this, or do you think it's more conventional consulting services for Dell to compete with the likes of IBM and HP?
I think it's the latter. I think it's them trying to make sure that they continue to be competitive with that. HP acquired EDS. They're certainly now well into the category of a services company like IBM, others. And I think that Dell didn't have that big services arm, and they need it to continue to be relevant in an age where their competitors all have it. So that's one way to think about it. Now, maybe, in the back of their mind is, now we have a group that might be able to pull together some cloud, but I don't think that was the primary goal behind that acquisition. I think it might be somebody's future roadmap thinking about it, but it wasn't the big picture thing.
Right. And then two other announcements that I saw, these related more to the enterprise. Amazon launched their service for virtual private clouds, and Eucalyptus announced an enterprise edition for private clouds. I think in the Amazon case, they're creating these virtual partitions on their premises. In the case of Eucalyptus, customers now have the opportunity to deploy a cloud on their own premises, both appealing more to the enterprise. From your perspective, John, are we reaching a point where these are the type of things that enterprises are going to look for before they move more to cloud adoption? What's your take on the enterprise readiness and what things like this indicate as far as state of the market?
Well, I think that both Eucalyptus and Amazon have come from the angle of the developer, the smaller business, the startup, somebody who is willing to take more of a risk on day one than a big enterprise would take. I think enterprises to date have certainly been playing with clouds, have been experimenting, doing proof of concepts and projects that are not mission critical core projects. I think those are sort of the ways that people have been tinkering with Amazon and Eucalyptus and others. I think it's going to be certainly a requirement to sort of bridge across to the cloud in some way. I think over the WAN, I think you've got challenges even beyond just the security aspect, the carving up the cloud and dedicating it or making the VPN tunnel or what have you. Those are security challenges, but then there's also just the speed of light problem that people are going to have in using the cloud at a distance and having the data at a distance. I think those are challenges that no matter what you do, if your cloud isn't in your own data center, you're going to have a problem. So that's where I think Eucalyptus does have a bit of an appeal. It's sort of putting cloud-like look and feel on top of VMware, making it look like an Amazon cloud. Long term, I think that that you're going to probably end up using native APIs of VMware versus trying to make it look like an Amazon cloud. That might be a short term bridge solution, but long term, I don't know why you wouldn't just use native APIs that VMware is certainly going to publish and make more rich and robust.
Right.
But in general, I think clouds are going to have to be bridged back to the enterprise. People are going to want to have IP address schemes out there in the cloud that look and feel like the ones they've been used to inside their firewall. They're going to want security. They're going to want guaranteed performance in terms of connectivity. And all of those things are starting to come to fruition. These are very early steps, very early first steps. But I think they're good moves, and the enterprise is going to expect it.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you there. A final piece in the news, it was some activity last week as the CIO or CTO from the White House was out around Silicon Valley about the White House eyeing cloud computing with their apps.gov initiative. And I know that you can't answer this question without a little bit of bias, John, but I need to ask you to just maybe put your U.S. Citizen hat on and maybe not your Rackspace hat for a second. Should the government be building their own clouds, or should they be partnering with private companies? I mean, it seems a little ridiculous to me that they're deciding that they're going to go do this when there's so many capable people who are out there to deliver these kind of services to the government.
Yeah, I don't believe necessarily that they should start from scratch. I think that maybe they should look to the vendors and the people that are doing it to give them guidance on it. And if that means they're going to build their own with the tools that have sort of come before, then that's fine. If it means they're going to use third-party clouds, I think that's okay too. I don't think that the government ought to go out and use the existing general-purpose public clouds as is. I think they ought to figure out a way to carve it out so that it truly is, you know, dedicated and isolated in some more security-conscious fashion. I don't really think that the national security of our country ought to be trusted to the same, you know, the same security protocols that we use for, you know, simple e-commerce sites. I think it should go beyond
right.
that.
Or,
but I don't know.
Or a social networking widget.
Yeah. The next Facebook app doesn't seem like it has the same security requirements as, you know, the CIA's secret missions or whatever. But the point is that I think that there has been enough work that's come before to at least show them how it ought to be done if they decide to build it themselves. They are at scale. It's not like they are a tiny or, you know, small, medium-sized company that doesn't have the scale to do it. They certainly have the scale, and they have enough internal customers, if you will, to reap the rewards of consolidation and oversubscription of the cloud. So they could certainly do it. But, the government tends to look to third-party companies anyway. They don't do it all themselves anyway. They use a contractor or a services company of some sort. So it's very likely that they're going to look to those people in this type of an approach as well. But that app store that they launched, apps.gov, it looks to sort of be pushing the idea of cloud. I do really embrace the idea, or applaud the idea, I should say, of the government having such a forward-looking vision for how cloud could reduce cost and how cloud could be better for us overall. It's great validation for cloud computing that they're publishing the App Store and they're talking about this so publicly.
Yeah, I agree. And as you said, hopefully they are working with some of the best-in-class providers, so they're not necessarily trying to do everything from scratch. I think the article portrayed it a little bit like the government had decided to invent their own cloud, and so maybe that's,
I don't think that's I don't think that they're thinking they're going to invent it and start and reinvent the wheel. I think they're going to look to people that have already built successful clouds and take cues from them and maybe even borrow some of the technology. Pay them for it, obviously, but it's certainly. It seems ridiculous to start from scratch.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. But let's jump into the guest Q&A with you, John, and a little bit more. We'll get into things about Rackspace specifically, but maybe we could start by you giving us a bit of your background and arrival at Rackspace.
Okay, well, I have been at Rackspace for a little over 9 years. I started at Rackspace in 2000, and prior to Rackspace, I helped found an ISP. Back in 1995 time frame, I started an ISP down in Texas. That's where I am today. After all these years, I'm still in the same town. The ISP sort of led me into hosting and into understanding internet technologies in a very detailed manner. And I think that led me to Rackspace. Some of the same people that were a part of Rackspace early on were either customers or competitors of mine in the ISP space. So we were sort of already friendly with one another, and it just was a natural fit for me to end up at Rackspace. And over the years, I've done a ton of stuff here. I've run operations for the company in the early days. I've helped build our enterprise services group that we call intensive hosting here at Rackspace. And then most recently, I've been really involved in helping build and evangelize the cloud. The cloud is something that I'm personally excited about. Spend a lot of time talking about it on the road with big customers, with analysts and reporters and everybody in between. And I think it's just such a great development for Rackspace to be a part of the cloud era.
Yeah. So you really have been right at the center of it all. Certainly, 9 years ago, we weren't anywhere close to the type of things we are today with cloud. That was sort of the, managed hosting to cloud transition. Walk us through some of that evolution from your perspective as to, when you started to see, because I think some of these trends were happening before we had cloud terminology.
Yes, where they were, certainly.
Yeah, walk us through that.
Yeah, so we started down the path before there were cloud terms to describe it. We started in probably 3 years ago with the platform that we used to call MOSO. Today we call it Cloud Sites. And MOSO was a platform as a service type cloud offering. And it's something that we started as an outcropping of our hosting business. We saw lots of companies come to Rackspace who, you know, were small to medium sized companies, people who were trying to start up some little company or sell flowers on the internet or something. And they would end up with a dedicated server. And for most people, a dedicated server is overkill. They don't need all the horsepower. They don't need all the headaches of managing an OS stack all the way from top to bottom. And
right.
they just end up over their head. And then, you know, the worst part about a dedicated server is that it's only one server. For some companies, that's all they needed. And one server doesn't give you much redundancy. It doesn't give you much scalability.
Right.
So that led us down the path of looking at ways to solve some of those problems. And we built that platform called MOSO, and it was a scale-out architecture, you know, massive scale with load balancing and shared storage. And that solved those problems for small to medium companies who really didn't have any business running a dedicated server. That investment 3 years ago put us on the path of sort of developing the cloud files platform that we, or the storage platform that we have, and then some months later the cloud servers platform. So it sort of launched us into the era of Rackspace developing software that would become products versus what we had done in the past, which was buying and sort of putting equipment into our data center and turning it on and managing it. That was us in the data center operations era, and today we're sort of in the software development era of Rackspace.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. Can you detail, I don't know if Rackspace makes this information public, but sort of how much of the business now is in the classic managed hosting model compared to the cloud models compared to just the sort of email and applications over the web?
Well, I think that if we don't break it out in that granular level, but we do break it out in this way. I think if you took all of our cloud businesses, that includes cloud sites, files, and servers, and plus our email as a service business, we have an email, both Exchange and unbranded email, those together represent about 9% of our revenue. The rest is managed hosting. So it's a fraction of the total, but it's a very rapidly growing fraction. I think the last statistics we quoted, and all this stuff is publicly available in our filings. We're a public company, so you can go read about this stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that cloud business is growing at about 145% annual growth, and that's big. I think it's growing much faster than managed hosting ever did. And that just sort of indicates the interest that we see from a lot of new customers. It isn't even just existing customers. You know, a lot of people ask me that question: is this just people moving away from managed hosting into the cloud? And the answer is no. We get a lot of new people, new customers, new business that we've never seen before. Starting with us for the very first time on cloud or email as a service.
Right. So the cloud computing market, now that it's sort of hit the mainstream, at least in the technology world, is getting more and more crowded. Well, give us some insight into ways that Rackspace stands out in the midst of that crowded arena.
Okay. Well, I think one of the biggest things, or maybe the most important for us at Rackspace, is the idea of customer service. I mean, our company is built on a philosophy of customer service and offering great customer service. We actually call it fanatical support. So a little bit of marketing there, but that's not a marketing term. It was created actually by our support organization. They wanted to raise the bar in terms of how we dealt with customers and how we supported them, and they came up with that term years and years ago. And so everything we've done as a company has really had service as a focus inside of it from day one. That includes managed hosting and cloud and email. So we bundle support with our cloud. It's not an add-on. It's not an afterthought. It's really part of it. We have a crazy culture at Rackspace. If you're familiar at all with that company, Zappos, that Zappos got bought by Amazon recently, and I think Amazon bought them because of their crazy culture and the way that they did things that was so powerful and so customer-centric, and I think we have that in Rackspace. We have a lot in common with Zappos. In fact, we know those guys, and we've met with them on several occasions, and it's weird to see how much it parallels that company.
Yeah.
But I think that's what's different about us than most companies in the hosting space. If you compare us to the big cloud guys, if you look at Amazon, Microsoft, Google, whoever, there's a lot of other ones probably to think about. One of the differences that we think will be powerful for companies is the idea of combining these different services together. One of the big stumbling blocks, you know, we talked about this earlier, but for enterprises is that the cloud is sort of at a distance. And how do I bring that together with my existing applications, existing stuff? Well, you know, I think Rackspace has the ability to host your existing stuff, whatever form it's in, inside of our data centers. And we have the cloud, so we can put the two together with very low latency and then support it all as one big operation. And I think that's going to be a difference between us and the cloud-only guys. Huh. Obviously, if you're a hosting company, you can probably do that as well. But there's going to be differences between all these people. The way that you build your cloud is going to be slightly different. We took a different stance on storage behind our compute cloud. So Amazon, when you lose a server, if a server dies for some reason, your data sort of goes with it.
Right.
We took an approach where we want to protect that data. And for companies that, you know, haven't quite mastered the idea of scale-out architecture and who are sort of relying on one server for one purpose, that server really matters, whether it's cloud or physical or whatever. It has to continue, you know, living for their app to operate. And so we took the approach that we want to protect that data and make it available even after a failure. And so we do that. And that's just a different take on sort of listening to your customers and knowing how they use your data or use your services. And I think that's going to differentiate us as well.
Yeah. I wanted to pick up on this theme. You talked about combined services. And at least from afar, Rackspace has been very aggressive in bringing new services into the offerings. I remember a while back the acquisitions of Slicehost and Jungle Disk, which I believe just added more of these capabilities. Walk us through some of the bigger strategy from your perspective there.
Well, the acquisitions that we made were designed to help us, to help accelerate us. I think that we had built the MOSO platform, we built the cloud files platform, and we were in the process of starting to build cloud servers, and we met the guys from Slicehost and found that their technology was good, the team was good, the cultural fit was great. And it made sense just to go ahead and bring them into Rackspace. And that helped accelerate us. That gave us a strong track record. That company had been around for a couple of years and had quite a few customers already up and running on their platform. So it was a tried and true software platform. And it really helped us get to market very quickly. Jungle Disk was a way to help us, you know, have an immediate use case for cloud storage from day one. You know, you want to have customers sort of funneled toward it, and Jungle Disk was funneling all their customers toward Amazon S3, and so when we acquired them, we gave customers the option to choose S3 or Rackspace. It's a little less expensive with Rackspace because we don't charge for any bandwidth when you use Jungle Disk.
Right.
But otherwise, you do have the choice, and so we didn't cut off that option. And so there are customers out there that are going to continue to use S3 just because they're comfortable with it. But we wanted to just have a great use case for cloud storage. And that sort of led us to a whole bunch of new customers. If you think about how many people need backup, it's quite a larger number than need managed hosting. Mm-hmm. And so it's a good entry point into the Rackspace family of products. So if they decide they love backup as a service, maybe they'll want email as a service, and maybe they'll want a cloud server for some project they're working on. So it was just a great way to bring customers in that that were already familiar with cloud and who might take us up on more of our services.
Okay, yeah, makes a lot of sense. An announcement I just saw this past week is that Rackspace is now supporting Cassandra, which is an emerging key value store that came out of Facebook. Can you give the listeners any more insight into sort of what's behind that or what's intended with that move?
Well, certainly. Cassandra is a, as you described, a key value store. The guys at Facebook developed it. I think it is the technology that powers some of their email or messages within their system. It helps them store those and index and search them. It's sort of, you know, for the layman, it's a giant data store, or a database that's not a SQL database. It's not a traditional database. It scales better than a traditional database. Doesn't have all the features of a traditional relational database, but it scales out better. It uses sort of a completely distributed model for storing and retrieving data. And it was something that we found a need for with some of our other technology that we were building. We had encountered scalability challenges with traditional databases. And so we looked around for existing projects that would help solve some of those challenges. And Cassandra stood out. It was one that was an open source project, is an open source project. It had been, you know, Facebook put it out as an open source project so that people could collaborate on it, but they didn't spend as much time on it as some projects, some other open source projects. They sort of put it out there and then sort of left it alone for a while and didn't add much to it. So we had a developer or two that jumped on it and started to add features and develop it and embrace it. And so we're sort of at this point one of the leaders in the development of Cassandra. It's not, you know, you the way you introduced it, you said we're supporting it, but we're really developing it. That's the way that I would put it. I think we're really one of the leaders in developing Cassandra and bringing it into the future where it could actually be used in production. I think there are some big companies that are starting to look at it, or at least well-known companies, guys like Dig and others have started to look at it as ways that they can help scale. And I think long-term it will end up becoming a service that we can offer to customers. I mean, I'm not 100% sure about that, but it's the work that we're doing is probably leading us to a future where we're going to use this as some sort of service where customers can use this scalable data store.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you that question. It's certainly the logical extension. I imagine once enough customers ask you for it, that it'll be easy to make that decision at the right time.
Yeah, right. And, you know, there's probably work that needs to be done to make it, you know, ready for prime time. It's still early days for Cassandra, but I think it's coming along nicely. Because it's open source, people can watch it themselves. They can really see that development in real time.
Yeah, it's a very interesting area of the big data market.
Yep, exactly right.
Another thing that I saw a few weeks ago from Rackspace was the Cloud Tools portal. Just wondering if you could give us a minute or two on that.
Well, Cloud Tools was, like you said, launched a few weeks ago. It's linked off of our RackspaceCloud.com website, and essentially it's sort of like an app store for cloud tools, cloud partners, plugins, anybody that's a third party that is sort of either developing on top of our cloud or works with our cloud can be listed there, and it's a way for them to be noticed and to be to make the customers aware of them, and also just to sort of foster that developer ecosystem around cloud computing. One of the things that we did, you know, we open sourced our APIs, and that you know, sort of excited a whole bunch of developers that were building, you know, tools around the cloud, because they could sort of see underneath the surface of what the cloud looked like and how it operated. And so we've really gotten a lot of developers and others that are excited about it. And it's just a way to highlight those folks.
Great. You know, there's a lot of talk about official standards, de facto standards. Rackspace has made a lot of things available as far as APIs and standards go in the cloud arena. What's your overall take on what's required within the broader cloud community to move adoption forward?
Well, I that's an interesting question, and I could probably give you three different answers, and I don't know if any of them are right, but I think that the truth is that we're seeing adoption without standards. Everybody would like a standard. They would love to see one, but I don't know if it's required for adoption. People are certainly embracing it today. They're using our cloud and others with no standards whatsoever. I think the fact that we did open source it gave some people some comfort around it. Open source our APIs, I should say. You know, we have embraced the idea of cloud standards because it would further the cloud. You know, for some people, I guess it's important. People that some bigger enterprises would say, I don't want to be locked into the cloud. I don't want to feel like I have to rewrite code later on when things change. The good news there is that there are already some folks coming out with third-party APIs that sort of sit on top of the clouds. I think you might have heard about Red Hat doing that recently. Zend did that recently. There might be some others that have sort of created these APIs that sort of mask or abstract all the clouds that are behind the scenes. We like the idea of standards, but one of the other challenges, I think, with standards is that, you know, it's hard to put standard on something that is going to change underneath. And, you know, if you try to say, you know, the Amazon API looks just like the Rackspace API, well, what about all the next set of features that each of us want to offer? What about the distinct differences underneath those APIs that need to be exposed to make the value apparent to customers? And so I don't know if, you know, necessarily standards are always possible in every aspect of it. I think that's a difficult thing to do when there's so much innovation going on.
I could not agree more. I don't think they're a requirement in the least. And I think that I'm actually quite proud of the way that the industry has moved forward with, whether you want to call it de facto standards or really
right.
being, you know, sharing APIs quite easily, because
right.
I think that, like you said, keeps the innovation curve moving and not bogged down in some committee meeting of personal agendas.
Right, exactly.
Great. A couple other things. I'll give you both of these questions, and you can combine them. One is, what are some things that we should be on the lookout for, maybe in the next rest of this year, early next year from Rackspace? And then beyond that, what's the one thing people don't realize about Rackspace that they should?
Okay. Let's see. In terms of what we're working on, I think that we're going to continue to work on the various clouds that we've talked about and adding features and capabilities. One of the big ones that we're working on is in our cloud servers platform. We want to do Windows support. We're Linux only right now, and that it needs to be cross-platform because Rackspace is a cross-platform company.
Mm-hmm.
We want us to launch Windows support. We want to have more partners building on top of our cloud and enhancing the APIs to make it more available to more people. More integration to come with between the clouds and with managed hosting. There's tighter integration that we need to work on. One of the ways that we got to market fairly quickly at Rackspace was by building the cloud products almost like a startup within Rackspace. That's where the MOSO name came from, and that's where some of the way it developed was sort of in isolation. And so now it in some ways it feels like it's a startup that we acquired, even though it was always Rackspace.
Right.
And so there's some integration work going on to make it a little bit closer to Rackspace. We've done that on the branding side, and we need to do it all on the underneath the technical side of things. And, I think that there's, some things that we're working on. I've talked about Cassandra. Those are things that are exciting that we're going to continue to work on. And I think those are the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then at least the ones I can discuss at this point.
Sure.
And then in terms of the thing that people don't realize, I think that, sometimes they don't have any sense for scale when they look at Amazon, Google. They know they're big. They don't know how big or they don't have any real numbers because they're not shared. But I think one thing that we did discover recently that was shared was just the relative size of our Cloud Sites platform. It's, you know, the one I talked about that was the platform as a service. It's actually probably the biggest platform as a service cloud out there. We heard not too long ago that Google App Engine, they were talking about 80,000 sites or 80,000 apps under that particular cloud. I think at that point, we had over 130,000 apps running in our cloud. And so just relative size of these clouds, it's hard for people to grasp. But I think we're pretty proud of the fact that we have one of the larger platform clouds out there. And I also saw another statistic that somebody did a study on, you know, where the websites in the top 1,000 sites were hosted, which ones were hosted in the Amazon cloud and Rackspace cloud. And we were excited to see we were number two to Amazon's EC2 cloud. So, you know, just getting a lot of traction. That's probably the thing that people don't realize. You know, we've sort of come into this cloud space relatively quickly, but we're doing really well, and we're proud of that fact.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, I think people forget that, you know, these other companies that we often talk about, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, they have huge operations that are, you know, not necessarily cloud related in the context of, you know, publicly facing customer accessible clouds, whereas in your case, between the managed hosting and the cloud offering, that's what you guys do.
That's what we do. That's the whole, you know, the whole company is really offering IT as a service in one form or another. If you take the cloud definition to the extreme and you say cloud is IT as a service delivered over the internet, I mean, a lot of what we do is cloud. So I think that the stricter definitions would lead you to cloud sites and servers and files. But even there, we're doing quite well and have a lot of traction, and they're really it's exciting to see that. So I think that's probably the surprising thing to most people.
Great. Well, thanks for all the detail there about Rackspace. You know, we hear a lot about the company in the news, but it's always great to get the firsthand details. Let's jump into the final segment of the show, Cloud Tips, where we pick an interesting consumer business-facing cloud-based application or tool. I'll go first. My pick this week is a video service called Vimeo, V-I-M-E-O. And the reason I'm recommending it is that, sure, if you want, you know, maximum eyeballs, YouTube is probably the best place to go. But Vimeo, for I think $60 a year, offers a whole bunch of functionality for restricting where videos show up, meaning you can show them only on your business website, creating a whole slew of customizations, password protections if you need it, really sophisticated tracking, and without necessarily all of that YouTube clutter. So I think for businesses who are looking to add a little bit of a video capability, Vimeo is a really is an interesting service. And again, from a business perspective, $60 a year is not really much to worry about at all. So that's my tip. How about you, John?
Okay, so my tip is a company called CloudKick, cloudkick.com. And I think they're kind of interesting because they are a sort of a third-party management tool for clouds. They support the Amazon EC2 cloud, Rackspace cloud, and they give you some cross-platform or cross-cloud management tools, some monitoring tools, the ability to launch servers within that tool, all from a really cool GUI. And I think they're a cool company. They've built some APIs that abstract the cloud behind the scenes, and I think it's worth taking a look at CloudKick.
Great. Well, we'll put URLs for both of those recommendations in the show notes. Well, John, thanks so much for joining us. It was really a treat. And is there any place that you'd like to point people to, websites, Twitter addresses, or the like?
Well, yes, certainly. RackspaceCloud.com is the website I would go to. You know, I think that's probably the number one place to send people to for anything cloud-related, or Rackspace.com. But beyond that, I think you can find everything there.
Great. Well, we'll put that in the show notes as well. Thanks again for joining us, John. We did appreciate that.
Thank you, Gary.
And thanks very much to our listeners. You can visit us and see show notes at thecloudcomputingshow.com. Or email us at thecloudcomputingshow@gmail.com, or you can subscribe to the show on iTunes by searching for The Cloud Computing Show in the podcast search feature. Thanks again, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.